Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Jason Zamkis and Chris Pieper from Governor Nixon's office here to testify in support of the bill.
Just, I think the Senator Schmidt, the chairman, hit on a lot of the points about the legislation as well as the scope of this project, but there's a few that I think we'd like to reiterate. First, when the first air show that Boeing went to with this product, this 777X, the Dubai Air Show, they sold $100 billion worth of this plane. That's the first air show they went to. I think they sold 2-to-1 as many as their chief rival, Airbus, a European company, sold. Boeing's been very clear they're going to build this plane, and they're going to build it somewhere in the United States. And with this legislation, we believe that Missouri has a very strong opportunity to build it here in St. Louis. We've got a tremendous amount of advantages. We've got a highly skilled workforce, and not just in a general sense, but we know how to build planes in St. Louis, and we know how to build planes in Missouri. We've got an outstanding business climate, which, to answer the question about what Washington had to offer, I mean, Washington has taxes, quite frankly, that we just don't have in Missouri. I mean, we're one of the top 10 business-friendly states. We're consistently considered a low-tax state, and so we don't have to offer that kind of reckless abatement for those kinds of taxes. And I think the senator also hit on another point. Senator Lamping, you had the point that standing still right now, we run the risk of stepping back. We run the risk of giving up our heritage as a leader in the aerospace industry in St. Louis. And so this is a transformational project. The composite wing that the company has designed for this aircraft is the future of air travel, and it'll be used not just in the 777X, but in subsequent iterations of this product, and potentially in other defense aircraft, like the bomber project that Boeing and Lockheed Martin are hoping to partner on. So with that, just give a little bit of background on the legislation itself. As the senator mentioned, we looked at how we could address a project of this size and scope within the existing programs that you're all very familiar with and that have successfully helped companies large and small. Those programs have protections in them. One that Senator Wasson mentioned, the biggest one, is that if the jobs aren't created and the investment doesn't happen, then we don't pay any tax credits. The other is that there is a requirement under these four economic development programs that there be a positive return on investment, demonstrated as for every dollar that we spend in tax credits to help offset the significant costs that Boeing would incur in building this facility here, that the state general revenue and education and all of our other priorities will get more than a dollar back. And that's how we can protect taxpayers and how we can protect our shared investments in education and other vital services. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions about the legislation or the proposal.
Questions? Senator Nasheed.
First and foremost, let me say this here. I would be remiss if I didn't say this to you all. I think someone in the governor's office needs to be fired. And the reason that I say that is because we're dealing with a piece of legislation of this magnitude. I'm the chairman of the Black Caucus. We have a strong caucus, and we haven't heard from one representative of the governor's office. I'm appalled by that. I don't know if he just takes people for granted, but it's really unfortunate. And I don't. It may not be him, but if it's you guys, he needs to fire you all, because someone should have talked to us. However, let me get to the question. Do you know the criteria Boeing will use to determine which bid they will accept?
As part of the process that Boeing is going through, and this may answer some of your initial concern as well, the vote by the machinists in Washington, it happened. It was somewhat of a surprise, and Boeing put out on the street a request for proposal. And they put that out. It was actually less than 2 weeks ago. And there was a deadline for the states to respond by December 10th. That meant that by December 10th, close of business, the legislation, any legislation had to be passed, and all of the information regarding the site, regarding the real estate, incentives, that all had to be in place.
Yeah.
So in the RFP, which is the subject of a non-disclosure agreement with the 15 or so states that are participating in this project, they indicate a number of things that they would look at.
Okay.
Things like a strong workforce.
I see.
Things like necessary infrastructure.
What about schools?
Like, education. Yeah. And one of the pieces really that quite frankly is something that I think we really have a lot of strengths in is on that education piece. We are working with a consortium of community colleges to develop a specific training programs. This is somewhat similar to what they did in Washington, but we think we can do it at a much larger scale, and I'll let folks from the community colleges kind of share some of that information with you. But we're looking to develop a pipeline to have thousands of graduates that can fill these new jobs.
Do have criteria that they will look at to determine, and those are some of those criteria.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions for the witness? Oh, Senator Sater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still confused on the net state fiscal benefit of it has to be greater than 1-to-1. Did you have an independent firm do the calculations on this, or is this just straight from the governor's office?
Senator Sater, the Department of Economic Development contracts with an organization called REMI, which it's an acronym, Regional Economic Models, Inc. They're an organization that provides economic modeling, I think, for 25 or so states, a lot of local governments, MoDOT, you know, other state agencies that look at economic impacts and do those kinds of studies. So it was it's a contract that the state has.
Well, as you and I know, mathematics can be quite deceiving at times, and I just want to get it into my head that this is actually going to work this way, and it's not just smoke and mirrors.
Understood. So the what the economic model does is it takes certain assumptions, like the number of direct jobs, people that would actually be employed by Boeing, assuming a certain salary, and assuming a certain amount of capital investment that the company would have to make, both in terms of real estate improvements, so building a new facility, as well as the equipment purchases that they'd have to make. And it projects out, based on those assumptions, what the tax revenue it generates economic impact, you know, the total amount of spending and economic activity, but it also shows the amount of tax revenue that would be generated based on our tax rate, you know, what portion of that economic activity is sales tax or is kind of a retail activity.
But if, of course, the F-15 and the F-18 fighter are being decreased, and there may be some job loss there. And say there was 2,000 job losses because of that industry, and yet we gained 2,000 new jobs to build the wing. But my understanding is that there would be incentives for those 2,000 jobs that are just kind of replacement jobs. Is that correct?
Well, the legislation, our existing programs that we have today, Missouri Works, Build, State TIF, they require the creation of new jobs, new withholding taxes. And there are provisions that address situations where you have reductions at other related facilities. So without knowing what the magnitude of any kind of reductions would be, it's hard to say what the you know how that would be affected. But that's the advantage of using the existing programs that have those kinds of protections built in.
But I just see that, according to the modeling, that if you lost 2,000 jobs and you replaced them with 2,000 jobs for the 777, that would skew the modeling benefits of a 1-to-1 ratio. You see where I'm going there?
And we did not perform a model that would show what would happen, to the chairman's point, if there were reductions. And we were not competing for this project, because ultimately, you know, if we don't compete for this project, then there won't be any return on investment. None of this will happen.
That's correct. But that's where I'm getting back to the modeling calculations as to how they're assumed. But we'll talk later. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wren.
Senator Lamping.
And it's okay if you don't know the answer to this, I mean, because the model is coming from a third-party vendor. But we're using a lot of the assumptions in the model to make this idea, the claim that this is going to pay for itself and be one for one. So I've got a few questions about some of the assumptions. If you don't have the answers, I understand there's a lot of moving parts. But so first, what's the ratio? I think Senator Schmidt said the ratio of direct and indirect jobs is 2-to-1. But are you using a bigger assumption than that? I mean, how many, for every the 8,000 jobs, how many indirect jobs would there be? Or the governor say 50,000 or something yesterday?
Anecdotally, relying on the 777, which is the predecessor plane in Washington State, the production of that plane supported 56,000 direct and indirect jobs. Those are jobs that are in, obviously, the direct manufacturer of that plane,
suppliers,
touch jobs that actually are people that are putting the plane together, as well as IT engineers who are designing the plane, suppliers who are not employed by Boeing but who are part of the supplier network that is currently in the Puget Sound area, which is focused on, you know, the commercial supply chain, which we don't have today of any significance in the state of Missouri, which is another reason why this is an opportunity to grow a supply chain that we don't have.
So, but we were looking at modeling, the three of us, before this a little bit, but you're making assumptions about income tax receipts on the indirect jobs. So is it 5-to-1, like for every one Boeing job, there's 5 indirect jobs? I mean, the ratio is pretty big, I think, in your model, right?
I don't know what the ratio of, and I can okay. get you the detail on it, but when you look at just the construction jobs,
right,
as an example of indirect jobs,
right.
Because obviously, you know, direct jobs, we all know that's people that are working on the plane. But if we take one category of indirect jobs, in the first year, 13,000 construction jobs. And those are indirect jobs, obviously. They're not.
But my point is that we're relying a lot on this model to suggest to us that there's a net positive return and that therefore there's no risk to the state. So it's important to really understand the assumptions in the model and question them to some degree. So, okay, that's fine. We can. Another question I have, and maybe you don't have the answer to this either, is in all this modeling, and we project the income tax receipts from both the direct job as well as the indirect jobs, do we start with the assumption that that direct job at Boeing, that person is not already employed somewhere else? Do we start like, so assuming that the person that gets, the 8,600 people that get hired to work for Boeing, does the model assume that they're not paying, that they don't have a job at all, and that they are not paying any state income taxes at all? And then when the jobs come, then suddenly the state gets the state income tax receipts from those 8,600 jobs. So the assumption that one person is sitting there not paying any state income taxes, they get a job, now they pay state income taxes, state pays a percentage of those income taxes back to Boeing, or do we assume that they have a job and they just get a better job?
Actually, the Remy model, unlike some of the other models that are out there, is oftentimes viewed as a more conservative model in that it applies a displacement factor so that it doesn't just automatically assume that 100% of the jobs are new jobs, that rather there will be some displacement from the other existing employment.
And the factor is, you don't know?
It's very industry specific.
Okay, that's great. I mean, again, we're talking a lot about the modeling, we're justifying the lack of risk, and we're touting the positive return, and we're relying all on the model, and that's why it's important to understand the model.
I agree. Except for, I think, the biggest protection against risk is the way that our programs are designed, where the company has to create the jobs, make the investment before the tax credits are paid. Mm-hmm. That's the real reason why there's no risk, is because if Boeing doesn't select, which I think Boeing will, but if they don't select St. Louis, even after this legislation is passed, no tax credits are provided. There's no risk to the state.
Well, the displacement factor takes into account the idea that all the people that move from one job to the next, hopefully, I mean, the state loses the revenues of job A, and then they have to pay an incentive on job B. So if at the end of the day the state has no new jobs, then we'll be paying for 50,000 new jobs. Do you understand what I'm saying? If everybody's employed and now they're employed at Boeing, directly or indirectly, then the benefit to the state is not that different. But anyway, I appreciate that. I'll ask you the same question I asked the sponsor of the bill. So why do we have a $150 million cap if this is such a positive return?
Well, I think if you look in the documents we provided, $150 million annually. If we were to, under the highest scenario here, the 8,000 job scenario, the highest amount of benefits that would be paid out under our programs with the positive return on investment is $154 million. So in order to show the high watermark of the maximum amount that could ever be paid out in a single year for this project, we use the cap of $150 million annually. But philosophically, because every dollar of incentives under these programs does generate a positive return, almost a 2-to-1 return when you're talking about these types of good, high-paying aerospace jobs, there's really no reason for a cap. That said, I think in order for the legislature and for the public to understand that under no circumstances would more than $150 million annually be provided to the company, I think that provides an added level of transparency.
Very good. Thank you.
Senator Wasson.
I want to touch just a little bit on what Senator Sater was talking about, because I've thought about the same thing. I mean, word is out there that the F-18 is slowing down. The military part for Boeing could be slowing down. I guess my thoughts there are, if that happens one way or the other, we have no commercial Boeing, and they seem to kind of look at this as two different divisions totally. So we have military now, we have no commercial. If the commercial moves into Missouri, no matter if it didn't, we would just lose those jobs, right?
I'm not going to comment on the specifics of Boeing's plans with regard to that, but I think Senator, the risk is that if we can't just stand still.
Right.
Because if we don't compete for the commercial production, and by the way, this commercial production is a bridge to other defense opportunities. So not only can we grow the commercial work that we don't have currently, but we open up other opportunities to help a longstanding Missouri company be more competitive to get more defense work.
Right.
So your point is exactly right that the opportunity to get in commercial, it helps defense and it opens up a whole new industry for us here in Missouri.
And I guess, F-15 got, it's been on the downward slope for a long time, but they're still making F-15s in St. Louis, right?
Yes, sir. Still making.
So, foreign sales and things like that seem to continue this military thing out for quite a while after somebody says we're not going to buy F-18s anymore. So it's not a given that those jobs are coming to an end. But if they did and we didn't get the commercial wing, we just lose the jobs. And they're just gone.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Romine.
Just for clarification, the construction jobs that are going to take place over the next 2 years to get the plant built, are those built into this economic report? It's going to be a positive fiscal note for the state, but those numbers are built in.
Yes, Senator, the construction jobs are built into the model.
Okay.
So we see that and those are some of the indirect jobs that we were talking about.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Cross.
Let's talk about the Remy model real quick. How long have we been using Remy?
Over 20 years.
Over 20 years.
I can get you the data.
So how many projects have we done a Remy model on, passed legislation, and gone back and made sure that the Remy model worked?
Senator, by law, we're required to not just do a Remy model on the return on investment for each specific program, but also specific projects. And so I couldn't give you a definitive number as to how many that is, but it's been a requirement that's in state law and has been in state law for at least 10 years.
So on those assessments that we do, we're supposed to do, I think it's annually required to do,
14.
How close are we usually with the Remy model? And have we made changes to improve the Remy model because of that?
Every year, Senator, the Remy model, the package from the vendor, I guess, is recalibrated to ensure that it's matching our economy that it's matching our the mix that we have in terms of industries, and also to reflect any changes in law, any changes in tax code, any phenomenons that occurred that year. So every year it is updated and it's calibrated to our state revenues.
That's good to know. Now, how far off have we been with legislation in the past when we project that, say, this project, how far off has it been in general?
I don't know any specifics, but Senator, I will say every year the Department of Economic Development produces the Form 14s that go through the budget process, and as part of that, you can see there are programs like the four that we're talking about here, or programs that are structured like that show consistently a above 1-to-1 return. There are other programs that don't, obviously.
But we obviously miss on programs. And my question is, how often do we miss? And
well, on these kinds of economic development programs, when you look at the program overall, we see consistently a greater than 1-to-1 return. That's not true for all tax credit programs, but for these economic development, these proven tools, we can show, and in the Form 14s every year.
Yeah, but I think I think there was an audit done on DED on Missouri Quality Jobs, and they stated in the audit that you've missed and you're overestimated. So there's certain concerns that the assumptions that go into these sometimes are overestimated to make a 1-to-1, I think.
I think, Senator, with regard to that audit finding, the criticism was that the projections on the front end of the number of jobs that would actually be created, I believe the audit report said that they were overestimated, but they are just that, they're projections. The benefit and the cost-benefit analysis that's done after the fact, based on the historical data of both the cost that the state is putting out in the form of incentives and the benefit that we're getting back in wages and indirect economic impact, has shown that those programs generate above a 1-to-1 return on investment. So it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
The thing where I'm coming from is that sometimes your estimates and your assumptions aren't correct. You could overinflate, and you garbage in, garbage out. So when we use models, we got to be looking back and making sure that the models are correct and accurate, and that's where those reports are to come in handy. And so, all right, I'm going to try to look at some of the reports probably before we get done tomorrow. Thanks.
Further questions for these witnesses? Thank you. Next up,